Just a friendly reminder that the opinions expressed on this show are not worth a Canadian penny, so disregard anything you hear that might get anyone in trouble. And despite some of the great ideas you may hear, don't try them at home. Go to a friend's house instead.
It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one. And if I did just a little less drinking, time to put something between me and the sun. Time to get a gun.
Ladies and gentlemen, in this corner, weighing in at more than he cares to admit to, we have the lover of 1911, the buying and selling magnificent himself, Trevor the Furlatte. And in this corner, weighing in at a whopping 76 pounds, looking wet, the 22 shooter, the gun walker, the I miss, so I'll call it a warning shot, Matthew McClatchy.
How can we be in the same corner?
And now, folks, I hope you're ready for the show of the night, as we talk about nothing in particular and make jokes that aren't really that funny. So, without further ado, I give you Slam Fire Radio!
That was pretty cool.
Yeah,
welcome to the show. This is episode 80.
I love it when he does stuff like that. He does not let us in on it.
So he does not.
Completely caught with our cut off guard.
Well, the laughter's got to be genuine.
So this is why this afternoon you asked the question, because you never do, because you never care. Am I lead this week?
Exactly. I said I'm going to be like prepared and actually do something instead of botching.
Unlike those other two guys.
Yeah. Well, just instead of taking four takes to try to get the intro right and all that.
Yeah. So, that's amazing. Anyway, you did do all that one take. That's
pretty good.
Yeah. You should have seen the looks I got while I was practicing at school.
I bet.
Awesome.
Okay. Well, Matthew, why don't you start us off with what you did with guns this week?
Hold on, guys. Before we go any further, I think we should say a couple of words about the victims.
The
victims that we had this week, and send out our thoughts and prayers to the family members before we go too far.
That's a good point. Yep. It was definitely a heck of a week, that's for sure.
And not done. I mean, Monday, two people attacked. Monday, two people attacked, or three, So two deaths in 2 days. And then again today, in Halifax. Halifax was on lockdown because they arrested somebody with a gun. So the crazies they're coming out in numbers.
Must be the Halloween thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they had another incident in Ottawa today, too. Somebody crossed the barrier when Prime Minister Harper was laying his wreath, and they basically put him down. They didn't shoot him, but they arrested him. And
I think they tased him.
Yeah, well, I saw him on the ground, so he went down one way or another. Come on. Like, do you not understand what's going on here? There was a barrier, and he crossed the barrier and then didn't pay any attention to what the police were saying to him. So,
verbally warned,
Now, like you said, Trev, the crazies are out. So, and it's probably just going to keep getting worse too.
So, again, our thoughts and prayers go to the family members of the victims and everybody affected by these tragedies. And
a big kudos to the Sergeant at Arms in Parliament too.
Yeah, New Brunswicker got the job done,
Mr. Kevin
Vickers. And to Prime Minister Harper, not that he listens, but I'm very proud of the speech that he gave.
Mm-hmm.
I think he did a fantastic job. He really is very well spoken, not like the shiny pony. He's an embarrassment and needs to leave politics. Stephen Harper said, we will not be intimidated. We will not back down. This will strengthen our resolve. And the shiny pony started kissing Muslim butt. We know that it wasn't you and to our Muslim friends and all that stuff. Like, just he makes no sense. I don't understand where that man's head is at. Canada has declared officially this was a terrorist attack. Both of the people, and thankfully they were both shot. I make no bones about that. I'm grateful they were both shot and killed. because I think these psychos need to know that if you try this in Canada, our military or police will put you down.
Well, here's the thing, though, on that, and I don't want to stray off too long on this topic, but it is sort of an interesting point, is they martyr themselves, and they take pride in martyring themselves. And, you know, as I for one, say, as long as they're not taking anybody else with them, martyr yourselves all you want, but unfortunately, they do take other people with them.
Yeah.
I don't know if even killing them is a deterrent to them. It's something that they almost strive for, which is why you see a rise in suicide bombers and stuff in the Middle East and in other places, because that, you know, that is the ultimate goal, or it's one of the ultimate rewards, is by martyring yourself for their faith. And it's ridiculous, if you ask me. But on an aside there, Trevor, another good point to them being shot and killed is that we won't have to worry about a big court case and all this stuff. You know, we saved a lot of money and time and heartache, really, because the victims' families don't have to go through this anymore. Yep. They know that it's over.
Yeah,
they had some closure. So I just hope and pray that the crazies stay away and that this does not continue. This trend is not a good one. Unfortunately, I think that I'm wrong on that, because they've basically declared war on Canada and said they're coming after us. So.
Three major cities. Toronto is going to be any day now, I would imagine. Why would you not go after Toronto? It's the biggest target we have. Kudos to the Ontario Ontario Provincial Legislature. Yep. They decided, no, we're not closing. Closing down and being scared is what they want us to do, and they stayed open. So good for them. So, and to everybody else, you know, I know you've heard this word a lot the last couple of days, but it's true. Be vigilant. Be aware of your surroundings. You know, city transit, be in condition yellow, know your exits, know who's around you, and you know, think your way through. If something happens right now, how am I going to react to it?
Yep.
So, sorry, Owen. Carry on, man.
I love how when we do the show that you guys let me in on, you know, what's actually going to happen during the show.
We said that before we were going to start. We really did. Maybe you were getting a drink.
I think I may not have been here for that part of the conversation.
That's all right.
And then anyway, it doesn't matter about it.
Either way, it's done now. So
yeah. Okay. Well, we'll go in order then, Trevor.
All right. So McClatchy was up, and while he was up, he helped me make a couple of reloading videos. One in particular for Sharp 97. Wanted some more explanation about the RCBS X die, so we did that. And there was another Facebook friend of mine who wanted kind of an intro to reloading, and in particular in 9mm, so we made a couple of reloading videos, and I think they're all right. They seem to be getting quite a few hits and whatnot.
Yeah, they seem to. You did a really good job on them, and an interesting point to note is you did them both in one take.
Yeah, and no editing, because the editing software that we downloaded
doesn't work.
You can get in there and you can play and you can edit, but when you try and export the file that you just created, it says no, you have to buy it if you want to export it. So anyway,
junky.
Yeah, so I just said, well, the heck with it, no editing,
just and, pop it up.
Yeah, so that's what we did, just posted them as is. So thanks for your help with that.
No worries.
Shot a match, but I'll let you talk about it, because you certainly have more to talk about it than I do. So we went to a match, and I'll let you cover it. On the way home from said match, I bought another bow. I bought a hunting bow. I bought a Hoyt Carbon Express. No, Carbon Express. That's funny. I bought a Hoyt Carbon Matrix Plus. And the Plus indicates that it's a longer axle-to-axle, if you can consider 35 inches a long axle-to-axle, which I do not. But anyway, super cool bow. The riser on the bow is made out of tubular carbon fiber. So the bow weighs nothing. Like, without a quiver on it, like a hunting quiver, it probably weighs, it's just over 4 pounds. So take it from there. Yeah. Currently it's a half an inch too short for what I normally shoot. Normally I shoot a 29 to a 29 and a quarter inch draw length. And right now it's set up to 28 and a half. So I'm just kind of playing with it. I actually took it outside for the first time today and stretched it out to 20 yards. I had just been, you know, plinking in the basement, and it was driving me crazy. I had to get it up 20 yards, so got the measuring tape out and took my block target outside and stood the block target up on a little portable workbench and blinked away for about a half an hour outside at 20 yards before I started cooking supper. And
that's the nice thing about archery is you can do that anywhere. It doesn't disturb the neighbors.
Well, yes and no. It's illegal to discharge a bow within 100 meters of a dwelling. And
maybe well, that's if you're hunting, though.
No, it's not about, it's about discharging a bow. It's not about hunting.
Well, that's about dumb, if you ask me.
It is. It's, you know, 200 for a shotgun and 400 for a rifle. Well, it's 100 for a bow. And I've always shot my bows in the yard. And will continue to do so until the cops roll up and tell me not to do it. So,
right.
There's certainly no issue in Beldun. I mean, Beldun, I could walk down the street with my shotgun on the way to my hunting trail. And nobody cared,
yeah.
I had a hunting vest on, so it was obvious what I was doing. But it's so funny. In Beldun, I used to get 55 meters right to the edge of my lawn to the end of the lot to shoot at a target. But when I needed 60 meters, I was actually standing in the ditch just like – level with the, like, people would drive by and like just see my head and my bow out of the ditch.
So you're releasing the arrow and it's like skimming through the tops of the blades of grass as it goes to its target.
Pretty much, yeah. So it's pretty neat. What else? Oh, I was on the Armed Squirrels Project to talk about, you guessed it, archery.
Yeah, it's funny. I missed that episode. I don't understand why I would have like bypassed that completely.
Because it hasn't come out yet.
And I'm, it doesn't matter. I'm still not going to listen.
Well, it was interesting. We wanted to talk about archery from a, hunting, but also as a prepper tool.
And that is an interesting topic, and I probably will listen just because of that, but yeah.
You know, archery is a really, I think, an important skill to have if you're a prepper, because using a bow and arrow as a means of protection, as a means of harvesting food, knowing how to use that tool, you know, I think it's just an extra skill that you can put on your skill list, right? It's an extra, you know, I can use a firearm. Oh, but I can also use a bow, or some people can just say, I can just use a firearm.
Right.
So it just adds versatility to your skill set. And then friend of the show, Lori Manzer, I think we spoke to him back on Canadian Reload Radio when he got in trouble with a shotgun in his backyard. For those listeners that have been with us that long, they may remember him. Somebody posted a picture of a bear that, or a friend of his maybe posted a bear that he harvested on his wall. And so I started talking about my experience hunting bears with archery equipment. Well, this psychotic auntie just like lost her mind on me and went back and forth, and I of course kept calm and used facts and terminology like carrying capacity and, you know, licenses and paying fees, and I can grow my own food organically. Why can't I harvest my own meat organically? No, I should get my meat from the grocery store.
No animals are harmed in that process, of course. We all know that, right? They grow the meat in the back.
Dude, I was waiting for her to say that, but she didn't. But she was like, I thought it was coming. Anyway, she actually got so upset that she told me that she wished that my children would be attacked and mauled by a bear. And that
Crazy how emotional and psychotic they really are. Like, not all of them, obviously, but you seem to just continue to run into them. I run into them myself, and it's crazy how they will wish harm on us because we don't have the same values that they do.
Yeah, fine. Wish harm on me. That's psycho enough.
But to wish harm on your children.
She wished that my children would have been attacked and mauled by a bear. I mean, at that point, the gloves were off, and I called her right out. I mean, I wasn't vulgar, but again, I said, you're actually, because I want to hunt bears, you want my children to get killed by bears? What kind of psychopath are you? Are you in therapy? Are you on medication? You need to start both of those right now. Nobody should ever want to see another person's child killed by a wild animal. Like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah.
And, oh, talk about the backpedaling. But it was too late. She had lost all credibility in the fight, yeah. And people were jumping on her for that. And
wow.
Yeah. So anyway, other than that, as you guys know, I sold my T-97 to pay for the bow.
Yep.
And I've been without what I consider a decent trunk gun since then. And I was going to replace it with another T-97 with a flat top upper, but I think what I'm actually going to do is sell my open gun. I got the open gun for a good deal, and I said I would try it for a season, and I did, and I like it. I really do, but I think that it's so different from shooting iron sights, and there's only one type of gun out there that has an open sight on it, and that's an open competition gun. Pretty much all other guns have some type of iron sight. If you can learn to use iron sights on one gun, you're going to adapt iron sights on other guns, and I think the longer I use an open dot, possibly the worse it's going to make my accuracy with iron sights become. I'm not, you know, I don't know if you follow me here, but
I do. I follow you completely.
You do get pretty used to using, you know, even on rifles, you get used to an AR, and there's a little bit of adjustment time to go back to using irons.
Yeah, so I think I would just like to stay with irons for everything. You know, my Glocks have irons, and my other competition handgun has irons. So, you know, go back to my standard division gun, which, you know, shoot 9mm would be cheaper. Yeah, no. 9mm major ammo is not cheaper than 40 caliber ammo.
No, it's not.
When you're using small rifle primers and shotgun gunpowder, no. So
no, the only way 9mm is cheaper is if you are just shooting production.
Yeah, that's right. And you buy, like, steel case surplus stuff. So anyway, that's my plan. My plan, actually, is to, I think, to sell the open gun and get a Tavor and maybe put a nice low-power scope on it and toss it.
Yeah, get one of the flat-top uppers.
For my Tavor, yeah.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
I think you're confused, possibly.
Oh, I'm sorry. Tavor, not T97. Yeah. Sorry, Tavor. All right. So you've had the T97, now you're going to go to the Tavor.
Yeah.
So you think the Tavor is better? Well, it is better. I agree it's better. Why do you think that's the way you want to go? I mean, I find that Tavor has its disadvantages over the T97. I'd prefer a T97 myself. But anyway, I want to hear what your thoughts are on that.
One thing I prefer about the T97 is it's smaller.
Yeah.
It's a smaller, lighter, compact package.
That's why I would want to go with that, yeah, personally. Yeah. But anyway.
The Tavor is more appealing because the backup sights are built right into the gun. It already has a flat top upper. The manual of arms is better.
You're right on all three counts so far, yeah.
And Timony is making a trigger for it. There's no trigger upgrade for the T97.
That's true, yeah. And we had two Tavors at the Daniel Shaw class, and I believe both of them had the Timony trigger.
Yep.
And one of the guys, I didn't see the others, but Ross's groups when he was shooting from prone were insane. He had multiple holes like touching regularly.
Yep. Yeah, and we talked about this too. Anybody who says the T97 is a 6-minute rifle needs to get out of shooting and start another hobby.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, that's it for me. Owen, why don't you tell us what you did, and I'm going to yell at you a little bit when you start. So go ahead. So I can yell. I'm going to hit the go button on you.
Good. Good. You think you're going to hit the go button, but I think you might be surprised. Anyway, shot a bear on Friday night.
Where are the pictures? Why haven't we seen any pictures? I got a picture of a scale. You shoot a bear, you don't put up pictures?
I only took one picture.
Why only one picture? How can you shoot a bear and only take one picture? What's the matter? Are you ashamed? Are you embarrassed? You hate me? I don't get
it.
Why
I didn't think it was that important to have pictures of a bear.
Of course it's important. Everybody wants to see and take part in your
triumph.
We want to share in your triumph. Thank you, Matthew.
That bear is in the freezer so fast, I almost forgot to take a picture at all.
And that's, I understand. I don't like messing around either, posing with animals. I want to get the guts out and knock the hide off as fast as possible. But seriously.
But it does only take 1/10,000th of a second to snap a picture.
Yeah.
Yes, I do have a picture somewhere, I think, on my phone. It's not a really good picture. I don't have any good pictures.
I'm sure it's better than the picture of the scale you took. Look, this is the scale. This is how much it weighed.
Yeah.
You could have been standing on that for crying out loud.
Yeah. All right, tell the story.
Not at 285. I really want to get a good picture, but the problem is at night when I shot it.
At night it's hard. Always hard at night.
Yeah, afterwards.
Oh, so you shot it at night, huh?
Well, no.
I know.
You know what I mean. It was dark by the time I got home.
Funnier my way.
You just can't get a good picture, and by the next day, it's all rigor mortis stuff, and it's really hard to get a good picture. So
yeah, my first one was like that. We took it out at 9 o'clock, and then started taking the pictures the next day. It was not easy.
Yeah, yeah. So, but I do have a picture of it laying there with my two girls standing beside it, which makes it look even bigger.
So it was 285.
Yeah, so 285.
So for you, that's like a monster. You consider that like a trophy?
That was a decent-sized bear. It was only 23 pounds heavier than my first bear.
Right.
But I still consider that to be, yeah, a pretty big bear.
Well,
it's not a monster. It's not record-setting by any stretch, no, but that's still...
Yeah, yeah, I mean, our average bear in New Brunswick is 250. You know, when you start getting into 350, 400-pound range, those are big New Brunswick bears.
Yeah, I'm not sure 250 is the average. Sorry.
You think they're bigger?
I think the average is smaller.
Oh, I don't think so.
I mean, I see the you know, all these people shooting bears and the weights and the people I've talked to, and I don't think 250 is an average. Remember, you got to have a high and a low to have an average. I don't think 250 is the average.
Well, we got a fair amount. We got a lot of 300-pound bears. I'll show you all the trail cam pics I have next time you're here. You'd be surprised.
Well, it could also be a regional thing too, guys. I mean,
yeah,
bears...
Yeah, because New Brunswick is big like Alberta, right? So we have all these little pockets of... No.
Okay.
Alberta does have great bears, though. They got a lot of color-faced bears. They've got cinnamons and stuff.
Yeah. That'd be a friend of mine shot one of those.
Okay. Anyway. Continue.
So, yeah, bear. What do you want to know about it? You want to know how I shot it?
Yeah. Probably. Did you... Did
want
you,
the story?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so I go out. I don't plan on shooting anything. I need to get out, clear my head, go for a walk. Of course, I take a rifle because it's bear season, right? But I do plan on going. I said, well, I'll go to this field. I haven't walked around this field. I knew there was bears in the area. It's near where I baited bears in the spring. And have my stand set up. So I said, well, I'll go to that area. I know there's a cornfield there. See if the bears have been taken down, how much corn they've taken down. There was probably pushing 3 acres of corn down the back of this field. So I walk down the side, and I sit there for a while. I see three deer. And they, I don't know if they winded me or what, but they knew I was there, and eventually they kind of scampered off. Not really startled, but they just took off. So I walked out into the corn. Two bears come out. Didn't see them both at first, just saw the one. And they came out right across from a patch of corn that was in front of me between me and the woods that wasn't knocked down. So I didn't see them until they were probably 25 yards from me. And they walked kind of outside. So I saw it. I got my gun around, and it took off. And it took off to the right. I took a shot at it on the run. But anyway, I missed by a long shot. I knew I was going to. It was gone. But then the little one, there was a small one with it. I'm assuming it was a spring cub, but I didn't see it until after I had shot. It runs right by me into the corn. Scared to death, didn't know where I was, didn't know what was happening. So I've got a little bit of video of it, like not real great video, but you can see that there's a bear probably 15 feet from me in the corn.
It's like one of those Sasquatch videos. Look, you can see the blurry fur right there. There it goes.
Exactly.
Watch. Yeah. He's got a Timex on. What the heck?
So that was kind of cool. So I wander out to see if there's blood or anything. I knew it didn't hit the bear. It was at full run. I mean, it was moving. So I just go
and
down
you were
another.
Using which rifle?
I'm using my M305. So, nice. 308. So I walk back into the, which I haven't shot a lot. I'm not super confident with it. But anyway, so I walk in back into the corn a little farther down. I'm just standing there this time, one row of corn between me and this huge area that's knocked down on my phone. I don't know, I'm texting or on Facebook or something. I look up and here's this big bear.
You're in a cornfield with a bear and you're in condition white. You're texting.
I saw it before it saw me. So the phone goes in the pocket real quick, and I had to kind of pull back the gun to get it by a stalk of corn. And as I was doing that, the head went up, the ears went up, and I just basically threw the gun to my shoulder and fired. And yeah, high lung shot. If I'd been any higher, I would have missed, or might have spine shot him. But it was a high lung shot, hit the lung, and then went into the liver because just the angle, he was kind of quartering towards me, and he ran. Was sure I hit him because of the way he kind of jumped sideways, and you could see the kind of claw marks and the dirt as he was spinning to get moving. And he ran again, same way the little one ran, down the field into the corn. So I walked, waited a few minutes, found my casing, picked that up, walked out, couldn't find any blood. Not a drop. No fur, no blood, nothing. It's like, man, I'm sure I hit him. And then I heard just the slightest, faintest death moan. I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure that's what that was. This bear is down here somewhere in the corn. So I walk up and down the corn. I'm going through. Can't find it anywhere. I walk about 75 yards down the field, maybe 100, on the edge of the corn, and I start walking straight. It's dark by this point. I'm walking straight into cross with the rows, shining my flashlight right and then left, right with each row, right, left, right, left. I get about 10 rows in. I shine left, and I see something that just doesn't look quite right down the row, and I walk down the row, and there he was. Not a drop of blood. The way it hit, the bullet didn't go all the way through. Hit the ribs, and I found the jacket of the bullet on the against the skin on the other side. When I cut him open. But yeah, he just completely filled up with blood. All the blood just drained into him. And yeah, so I wouldn't have been able to track him that way. Then I called a buddy and called a random New Brunswick Dave, and he came with his little pickup, and we almost got stuck, and we pulled him out, got it loaded, and yeah.
Nice.
By 2 Fun. O'clock the next day, it was in the freezer, and yeah.
What kind of bullet did you use?
I was using a Hornady, I don't even know what it was. Some sort, it was like a Hornady, you know, nice, a good quality ballistic tip.
Interesting. But, you and Luke should talk, because Luke's got an M305, and yeah. Not all hunting ammunition will feed into his gun, so he may want to try what you're trying. But seems to me, and of course I'm not smart and I don't remember stuff, potato, I think he said it was Hornady that was giving him a problem, so maybe he's just got one with a chamber that needs to be reamed or something. I don't know.
I've tried three different. I've tried Federal, I've tried Remington, and this Hornady, and I've had zero issues feeding.
Oh, nice.
Any of those.
Well, Luke, if you're listening and you need to have your chamber looked at, talk to Filthy. He'll take you to the M14 Surgeon General there in Fredericton. Yeah. So awesome, yeah. Fun story, man.
Anyway, so that was kind of fun. It was good, nice that to have my this gun, another one off the list that's drawn blood. So, and what else did I do? Then on Monday, following Monday, I guess this earliest Monday, I think it was Monday or Tuesday, I took the kids, well, took the whole family, I guess, hunting, and saw a few birds. I didn't even see any birds. I heard a lot of birds as they took off, but didn't really get a shot at any. But it was nice to get out for a walk, and my kids discovered that there are potato fields. So they were having a great time running through the fields collecting potatoes, as if they'd never seen one before. But anyway,
it's different, though, when they take them out of the ground.
I guess, yeah. They were
my neighbor.
If I tried to get them to go to the garden and pick the potatoes I dug up, they'd whine and complain about it. But
exactly.
Take them to a field, and they're happy to do it there.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
My niece and nephew were visiting one time when I was living in Beldoon, and my neighbor had a garden, and I thought it was just potatoes, and the kids were over poking around, and next thing you know, they come over with a huge turnip. Uncle Trevor, Uncle Trevor, look what we found. I was like, really? Go see if you can find me three more.
Last night, I sighted in Type 97, roughly sighted in. It was getting pretty close to dusk. So,
whose Type 97 was that?
Trevor's old Type 97. So, working on that a little bit. Tonight I mounted my bipod on my 305, getting ready to. I think I'm getting ready to put a scope on it, get a scope mount. I don't think I'm going to change out the stock right yet. I don't have the money quite for that, but I'm going to get the mount and mount a scope on it for deer season. So,
Archangels aren't bad. I think that's what Luke did.
That's what I'm going to get.
Yeah, and Kyle's got an Archangel, and my buddy down in Halifax, he's got one that they look really cool with the Archangel.
Yeah, that's the plan, to put like a Desert Tan.
Well, I can't agree with that, but
yeah, I was just gonna say, yeah, because that makes perfect sense, because out here in New Brunswick we have a lot of deserts.
Yeah, it just looks cool. That's the only reason.
No, it doesn't. But anyway, what are you thinking for an optic?
Haven't really decided. I'll probably just throw something cheap on it, like something I have kicking around here for now.
Some Nickstar thing, probably. It'll be fine. No, it'll probably hold up.
I think it's a Bushnell or something, but eventually I'm going to put... I just don't have the money to spend on something high-end right now. But yeah, I'll probably end up putting, you know, $500-$700 optic on it. I don't need anything crazy, but...
Do you know what magnification range you're going to go with? You're going to go with a variable or a fixed, or...?
Oh, I want a variable, as wide a range as possible.
Yeah, Luke picked up a Vortex Diamondback, and he wouldn't have spent five or six, but he's very happy with it, as far as I can tell so far.
Okay.
Something
yeah.
to look at.
Vortex, it's a good manufacturer. They do pretty good.
And the warranty is amazing, right?
Yeah. We all know the story about that. Yeah.
And then last thing is I'm looking to move my 10/22, preferably for a shotgun, so...
I think I asked you this in Facebook, but I don't know if you replied or not. You had been looking at an 870. Is that your preference, or is it either an 870
I go the other way. I'm like, dude, why are you getting rid of a 22? And Trevor's like, yeah, what kind of shotgun do you want?
Well, are you hooked on the A70, or would a Mossberg 590 also work?
Oh, Mossberg 590 would be fine. I just that's what the guy had, the person
right,
who wanted
to trade.
Okay. That's what he had, and so I said no at first, just because he had some weird funky pistol grip stock on it. And then I got thinking about talking to a friend of mine. He's like, well, there's probably lots of 870 stocks around. You should get it and then find
and
then
a stock. Swap the stock and then sell the other one, yeah.
By the time you found out I had two that I would mail immediately, it was too late.
Yeah, that's right. He'd already sold it to a buddy of his. So. But he still maybe wants to buy the 1022 because he was just going to buy a new one. But I'm not 100% sure what I'm going to do yet. If there's listeners out there who want a 1022 with some mags, I'm looking for a shotgun. I would love a Stevens 320. But I would take like anything.
He'll take a High Point carbine while you're at it too. One of those.
Get a Mossberg, man. Just
Mossberg.
Just get a Mossberg.
I want something that this is where I'm torn. I really need two shotguns, but I know I can't do that. So I'd like to have something along the lines of the Stevens 320, so a short barreled, like an 18-inch tactical pump shotgun. Not a pistol grip, nothing that, just regular.
Just a short barreled security style shotgun, yeah.
But I also need a pump hunting shotgun.
Well, then get yourself like an 870 and.
No, yourself the Mossberg 500 combo from Cabela's for like $300. It comes with an 18-inch barrel and a 27-inch or 28-inch barrel with chokes.
No, because
for
then
me,
you're reduced to capacity limitations.
Oh,
if
true.
Get with the 500. You either got to go 590 or 870. 590 will come ready to go with 9-round capacity.
The barrel for chokes, and you've got your hunting gun and your.
Roger
well,
that.
That's what I was thinking with the Stevens. It's got a fairly heavy barrel. It's a fairly heavy gun, unfortunately, but it does have a heavy barrel that I could thread for chokes. And then I can kind of do both. It's not going to be a primary hunting gun for me. It's a hand to a buddy that's going with me or something my wife can carry. Or it's a once-in-a-while bush gun for me.
590. It's light, so, 9 rounds. You can thread the barrel.
What's it got for the barrel length, though?
20.
20, that's not too bad.
That's long enough. I mean, mine's a 20 as well, and mine's plenty long.
And with a choke, you'll get, Matthew knock a partridge out of the air at about 30 yards flying at 50 miles an hour. Like, that's Matthew, though. That's not you. But
I'm just saying, the gun
is capable.
Oh, I can do that when I see them. Unfortunately, they seem to know enough to fly the other way from me.
Yeah, he was talking about the gun. He wasn't talking about your ability.
Right. But I'm used to hunting with, like, my semi, which is a 28-inch barrel. Plus, if I have the Pattermaster in it, 2 more inches. So, it's just unwieldy.
Yes, it would be.
Yeah. It's meant for popping out of a blind in a field. That's it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Speaking of 1022, anyway, I'm going to scroll off. Sorry. Matthew and I were in a gun shop. And you ruined my fun, by the way. I got two gun shop stories. One, we saw a 50th anniversary 1022. Really impressed.
Didn't like it.
I liked it. But man, what was it, like $500 or something,
Matthew? Expensive, and it was too ornate.
Yeah, very ornate.
It had like fish scale.
Snake scale.
Snake scale, whatever, checkering in it, and it's like, I'd hang that over the fireplace and never touch it again, you know. But
that's what it's for. It's the anniversary one, right? Limited edition, fancy, blah, blah, blah. So then, the guy's a FUD, right? I'm asking him questions about his archery equipment, and he doesn't have a clue. And then I'm out looking for 300 Savage ammunition, doesn't have a clue. So I decided I'm going to have fun with the guy. Matthew's not picking up what I'm laying down. He's got one of those 22 versions of a SCAR on the back wall. Mm-hmm. So I look at it and I look at him and go, you sell assault rifles? Before the guy can answer, Matthew's like, you know that's not an assault rifle. Rah, 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 rah. What are you doing?
It's my automatic go-to mode. It's like, why are you doing this? Stop propagating this false rumor crap.
Exactly, right? You know, I know the difference, but I wanted to...
I didn't want him to think that.
Yeah, I wanted him to sweat. He was a FUD.
He wasn't going to sweat, because he just looked at it and went, oh, no, it's just a 22.
No, like, that's not what he said at all. He looked at it and said, no, it's just a toy.
Oh, he's just a toy, right. Yeah, that's right.
Does it shoot toy bullets? Yeah, I was going to have fun with that guy, but... You busted me right away.
Yep. That's me. Fun killer.
But now you'll know for next time. I'm playing with a guy. Let me have my fun.
All right.
I'm a jerk like that. All right.
Yeah, so that's it. That's it. I like how we ended that. I'm a jerk. That's perfect. Okay. Yeah, so I guess that's it for me. I can't think of anything else I did. So, Matthew.
Well, I too went hunting. I was not as successful as you because I didn't get a bear. I didn't get anything, actually, this week. I did see plenty of grouse. Saw a really big one today, but I was out with my .22 instead of my shotgun, and I wasn't in a position. If I'd had my shotgun, I would have had him, no problem. But I decided to take my .22 today instead, and you know, work on some headshots and precision shooting and stuff on the birds and whatever else. And so I didn't. Yeah, shut up, Trevor. It's practice. Maybe precision's the wrong word, but when you're going from a shotgun to a .22, I don't know what word to use instead.
You don't harvest enough animals to go play that game, right? It's not like.
It's not like I do this because I need to eat them because I don't have money for any other type of meat. So this is fun for me. And the last couple of birds that I've got were too easy with the shotgun. It just seemed to be a little. Oh, there he is, point and click.
And I'm okay with that.
Oh yeah, no, and that's fun when you have to eat. That's the way to do it. But I wanted to take the .22 for a walk. So
you need an over under so that you can have both options.
I used to have one.
I'm surprised you don't hunt with one.
And last time you tried to talk about one of those was in our favorite gun episode.
Yeah, like, oh, crap. He said they're crap, and so I walked on. So anyway, I almost did what I've done twice before. I went in after the bird and ended up chasing a rabbit out instead. It's the third time I've done that. This time I didn't take a shot, not because I didn't have one, but because it was just a little rabbit, and I was like, "There's no point." So I let the little guy go. But it was fun. It was a cool day out in the woods. And incidentally, had I fired at either of those animals, I wouldn't have gotten either of them because the gun didn't shoot. I took it down to I sort of stumbled across a gravel pit on the way home and wanted to just get out and light some rounds off because it's fun and it's .22 and why the heck shouldn't I? So click. Nope. Oh, must be a dud. Cycle. Click. What the? Click. Son of a... So I was like, this isn't good at all. I had just cleaned the gun, just put it back together, greased it up, made sure everything was working great, and the stupid thing won't shoot. It wasn't feeding right. Everything you could think of. It stovepiped once when it did manage to shoot. And I was like, I was very frustrated. So I chucked the gun back in the truck, and I headed home and down a trail I'd never been down before, and I got stuck out in the woods and ended up using 4-low to get out, and... Oh, it was an adventure. And you know what they say about adventures? They're not fun until you get home. So now that I'm home, it was awesome. I had a great time because I made it home. Had I still been out there, I would not be having fun at all. But it was fun. I did enjoy myself today while
you're
I was
right,
out there.
You're right. We've all been there. Sucks until you're home.
That's it. But anyway, what it turns out is I have two 795s and one Model 70, and I just assumed that everything was 100% interchangeable between the three guns. And between two of them, the two 795s, they are. And I assumed, because I didn't look that close, that the Marlin 70 would have the same bolt, same firing pin, same everything, and it would be exactly the same across the... because they're based on the same action.
Well, the 1022 takedown is the same as all the other models, but whatever, carry on.
Are you done? Because that's a 1022 takedown, and this is a Marlin 70, not a Marlin 795 takedown. So yeah, they're actually two different model guns.
Exactly, yeah.
There. Anyhow, what I had done is I had taken what I felt were the best parts and put them all out of the three guns and put them all into one gun. And it turned out that the bolt from the Marlin 70 made it into a 795, and that was the problem. So I came home, I took all the guns all apart again, put them all back together the way they should be, and everything seems to be working out fine now. So it was just sort of a frustrating experience playing with my guns, but it was cool. It was an interesting learning experience, and it's nice that the guns are back together and working properly. So that's what I did with my guns and my hunting. I also did go to the range with the 795 and did some more bulk ammo testing just for fun. And in the past, I've discovered that Dynapoints have been the most accurate out of the different bulk ammos that I have access to. And my last range visit proved me wrong. The Winchester bulk pack, the 555 stuff, actually pulled in an impressive lead, less than half an inch at 25 yards, which isn't that interesting whenever you consider, you know, I can do a half an inch at 100 yards with my axis, but it's 22 ball camo. You're talking less than an inch at 50 yards, which is generally considered the benchmark and to be acceptable for 22 ammo. So I was really impressed that that stuff's just, it just performs for its price. It's amazing stuff. I really like it. Then shot a match last weekend with Trevor down in Miramichi. It's my first time to the Miramichi range, and I have to say, Doug puts on an awesome match. I'm used to going to Dalhousie, where there are, 11 or 12, teen dozen different pistol bays.
14.
And you got to walk between, you know, they set up one stage per bay generally, and you're walking around. And it's a great way to do it because you can get all kinds of squads shooting, and there's no worry about stepping on each other and stuff like that. Well, Doug's pretty much got three pistol bays. Well, three bays, period. And he only utilized two in this last match, so you had 9 stages in one bay and then 2 stages on the other side of the berm. And the advantage to that is it goes quick. It goes real quick. We shot 11 stages in, 4.5 hours?
Yeah, we started about 9:30 and we were done at 2 o'clock.
It was, when we were driving there, Trevor's like, oh yeah, we'll be done around 3. I'm like, dude, we're shooting 11 stages. There's no way. I mean, we shot, how many stages did we shoot at the mini match with Tommy there, and it took us it took us forever just to shoot 6 and 11. I'm like, oh my goodness, I'm gonna be so dead tired. I'll be like 7 o'clock by the time we're done. Nope, 2:30, all done, wrapped up, ready to go. Crazy fast. It just, the stages are right there. You shoot this one, you take 3 steps, and you're shooting the next stage. So it was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. I like this setup, and I like how quickly it went. Everybody was in a really good mood, which was really fun. That makes matches so much better. You know, somebody screwed up, and they laughed instead of cursing and throwing things. So it was really nice to have that sort of atmosphere there. And I think it was partly because it was the last match of the season. It doesn't really count for anything, so everybody was just there to have fun, and have fun we did. I walked up to one older gentleman, and I didn't know who he was, and just started joking around and being myself. Turns out he's the club president. So that was interesting. But he seemed to take everything in stride, and I didn't get shot, so I guess I didn't say anything too bad. Other than that, I did come in first in my division, which was a lot of fun. I didn't think I was going to. John Campworth was my main competition, and he is a good shot. He is a very good shooter. I did not expect to beat him. He actually beat me time-wise overall. He had better times in the majority of the stages. I just managed to eke him out in a couple of points. He managed to hit a penalty target in one of the stages, which was unfortunate, and I shot the match clean, so that was probably a contributing factor. But it was a lot of fun. I had a lot of good times out there, and Trevor's open gun even malfunctioned a few times for all of our enjoyment.
It actually did not. I had zero malfunctions. I love the story about your meeting the club president. I was actually telling that to Bolivar today. And how, you know, you're improving your social skills. Matthew walks up to the guy and he makes one lame joke and another lame joke. And then he goes, oh, by the way, yeah, my name is Matthew and I'm an a-hole. I'm like, good for you. Now I don't have to, like, make excuses for you later next time.
I figured it was better to be upfront about these things. Just let them know right off the bat. Look, I'm a jerk. I'm an idiot. I make stupid jokes and say stupid things, just so as we're all on the same page. That's who I am, and I'm apologizing now.
Have a problem is the first step.
That's right.
Yeah. So I was like, this is awesome. Now I don't have to make excuses for you after the fact when he comes up to me and goes, man, who is that guy?
You
brought him was a real jerk. I say, no, dude, he told you he's not a jerk. He's an a-hole. Like he prefaced it. Like so.
He knows who he is and what he is. So yeah. Anyway, that's pretty much all I did. It was a really good week, gun-wise, so I'm looking forward to another good week next week if the rain will stop.
Okay, good. Well, now we're going to... Do we have any upcoming... We don't really have any upcoming events or news. Do we have any news?
Did we... No, we got an upcoming event.
Oh, how come it's not in the show notes?
Because I forgot to put it in when I was doing the notes today. The 5th annual charity shoot will take place at the Rescuers Gun Club on June 20th. The charity that we're going with this year, where is it now? I didn't tell you guys about that, did I?
You told me.
Okay.
Didn't we mention this on last week's show?
I don't think we mentioned the charity.
I deleted it too.
I had the official name.
Oh.
We did mention it or we didn't?
I'm pretty sure we did.
Anyway, it's a foundation raising money build a funeral home. Almost the same thing. A senior home.
A senior home, yes. Not a funeral home.
Close enough.
So, yeah, so that's coming up. You say June?
June 20th. 15th?
June 20th.
June 20th.
All right, good. Okay, well, let's... I don't think we have any news. We had kind of touched on the news at the beginning of the show. So let's move on to the main topic. So this week, given the recent events that have been taking place in Canada, we thought we would talk a little bit about how we store our firearms in our homes or in our vehicles, as the case may be. And
I think we want to preface it by saying we don't offer any sort of legal advice. We're not telling you how to store your guns. We're just talking about how we store our guns.
You have to make your own decisions what your comfort level is with storage.
That's right.
Within the law, of course. This started off, as most of our listeners would know, on Monday, after the two military members in Montreal were attacked, a lot of us decided it was time to apply for an ATC for no other reason.
Authorization to carry, same as a CCW in the States.
Right. Thanks for that. We know that we're going to get denied. We're upset about getting denied because we don't get the right to appeal. We don't get a reason for a denial. We just simply get denied. So, but anyway, we wanted to start a movement of Canadian gun owners applying for an ATC to hopefully put pressure on the CFOs, on the Minister of Public Safety, to say, hey, this is wanted. We deserve it. It's our right to protect ourselves. Now acknowledge that right and allow us to use the tools to protect the best tools to protect ourselves with. Hopefully get some media attention, which could go both ways. I think if we do get to carry, I think the government would want it kept on the down low that they allowed us to do it before fear of backlash. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
That's the thing, eh? This isn't something that has to be in the public eye right now, because we already have the laws. It's not like we're introducing new legislation and it has to pass in Parliament. It would be published and it would be a big debate in the public forum.
Right.
It doesn't need to happen. All they got to do is say yes instead of say no, and we can carry guns.
And that's the frustrating part, is we are a may issue country, not a shall issue. Unfortunately, we don't have a Second Amendment. So we do have carry laws on the books, and we're considered a may issue. And after the second attack in Ottawa, people have been calling their CFOs and the Canadian Center for Firearms to get the proper application. There are two applications for ATC. There's an application for ATC that's on the RCMP's website specific to people working in an industry like armored car courier services, and people working in the trapping industry or seismic industry, where they're out in the remote wilderness areas, and they sometimes get permission to carry because they have tools and equipment in their hands and can't carry a long gun.
Yeah, we had a listener on the show, actually.
That's right.
Jeff Reese.
Yeah.
No, not Jeff Atkinson.
Yeah. Carries a Glock 20 and 10mm.
Yep.
And
no, he doesn't. He carries a CZ and 9mm for coyotes, and he carries a 357 for wolves or bears and stuff in the fall.
Okay, well, we've got another listener that carries a Glock 20 then.
Yes, we do. That's right. I forgot about him. Yeah. We have another one. So, yeah, we actually do have people carrying guns for self-defense in Canada. It's just that you got to be in the right province, got to have the right job.
So what's happening with people that are calling, in particular the military? The military has started to put on, and I don't mean officially the military, I mean members of the Canadian military, servicemen and women, have been calling, asking for an authorization to carry, which makes sense because the Canadian military so far are the ones that are being targeted by these terrorist bastards. And they've been reporting on Facebook and on forums for the last 2 days that they're being told flat out, you're going to get denied. Give us your $100. So there's two applications. Sorry, let me backtrack. There's two applications. There's the one for people like armed guards, and then people working in remote wilderness areas. But there's that application, which is accessible on the RCMP website. There's another application that you have to request, and they will email it or fax it or whatever. and the fee for that one is $100. And they're being told, yeah, we'll take your $100, but we're not going. You're automatically denied. Don't even bother sending this in. So I find this irritating to no end. If we're a shell issue, or a May issue, rather, if we're a May issue,
they should at least look at the circumstances for each individual. At least.
That's right. And then if they're going to deny, they have to cite a good reason why they're denying and then give me the avenue to appeal. So
yeah, it can't just be no. I mean, this is a democracy here, folks. This isn't a dictatorship. I don't care who you are. You can't tell me, no, you can't participate in this law.
That's right.
Flat out. You have to give me a reason. There has to be at least something.
So there either
the thing is, they don't want to give a reason because then they know people can appeal if they give a written reason.
Well, that's it. And if people could appeal, you get the right judge, and he would overthrow it, and he would say, issue this man his ATC.
That's right.
And so they're scared of that. They do not want that to happen.
No. And I don't know why they don't. What's it? Well, you know, what right do they have to tell me that I can't defend myself with a firearm? They don't have that right. I have the right to it. And they have no business. There's no natural law out there that gives them the right to deny me the right to protect myself and my family. Yeah. However, it's going to take a civil suit, and then it's going to have to go all the way to the Supreme Court of Canada. So this isn't going to happen today. And so in the meantime, we have to look at other alternatives.
Well, let me tell you another story about ATC and an application. There's a person, a gentleman, who lives in this province in New Brunswick. And we've spoken to other listeners who live in other provinces, Alberta, Calgary, whatnot, where they seem to be okay with handing out wilderness protection permits, is basically what people call them, the wilderness carry. And that's for, like Trevor said, for people who trap, people who work in a wilderness location who they just can't carry a rifle or a shotgun because their hands are full with other things. And like I said, if you're in Alberta, it doesn't seem to be a problem. The listener that we had, Jeff, said he's got a couple of friends that he knows and coworkers that also have their ATCs. So they seem to be okay, cool. You know, you work out in the woods, you could get eaten by a bear. Makes sense. Carry a gun. Here in New Brunswick, and I'm not going to give you the individual's name just because I don't want him to have any sort of backlash over this, but he is somebody who works in the woods. Legitimately, it's not his main job, but it is a job. It is employment that he does in the woods. He traps and he harvests fur. And so he applied for his ATC, his wilderness carry. Now here's the thing. He's already got his ATC to work as an armored guard. He already has his training. He already carries a gun for a living and they still said no.
I want to jump on that. Jump on that for a second. The government will arm somebody to protect my money, but they won't arm me to protect myself.
Well, and that's what
way more training than they do.
That's what people say. But here's the fact is, and what they say, and you know, yeah, you want to say they're doing it to protect the money, but really they are carrying guns to protect themselves. From what I understand, they're supposed to abandon the money and use the gun to defend themselves, not to protect the money. But that is what it seemed like. You know, you're carrying around a lot of money, so your life is in danger. So why is your life more valuable than my life? I mean, I drive a truck around that's probably worth more than, well, no, my truck isn't, but some people have trucks that they drive around them that are worth more than what those guys carry in those little money bags whenever they clean out an ATM. Like, why, you know, somebody could steal your truck. It's if you're being targeted for monetary value, everybody's worth that much, you know? But anyway, he actually has an ATC, and they still said he called them personally. He spoke to different people who are high up in the food chain, and they basically said to him, look, we're denying this. We're not giving you a reason why. You can't appeal it. And basically the only thing we're going to say to you is the people who are even higher than us just don't want this to happen. And so you're not going to get it. And that's not even for just a concealed carry for protection of life that you would have in an urban environment. This is for this guy who would be out in the middle of nowhere. It's not a threat to public safety. They don't even consider that. They just don't want him to have a handgun out in the woods, flat out, period. They don't have any reason for it except they don't want him to. And that really pulls my chain. That
Grinds your gears?
Yeah, grinds my gears. Oh, man. So, anyway.
Well, with that in mind, then, let's share with the listeners our current storage setups for our firearms, both in the home and in our vehicles. And then they can perhaps get some ideas and maybe want to change their setups or, you know, like I said in the article I wrote in the NFA, Firearms Journal, you need to, after what's been happening, you need to go back and look at your current storage setup. Ask yourself if it's accessible and ask yourself if you're comfortable making some changes to make it more accessible. We had an RCMP officer gunned down right outside somebody's living room window. We had soldiers run over in a parking lot. And then we had somebody storm Parliament. So in the case of the RCMP officer, that happened outside of your home. Could you get to your firearm and deploy it before that guy decided he was going to kick in your front door? In the case of the hit and run in Montreal, could you open up the trunk to your car and retrieve a legally stored firearm and deploy it if he was coming for you before he got to you? And in Parliament, same thing. You know, if you can't carry on your person, but if you had a hunting license and whatnot, could you get to your car if you needed to? In every situation, if you can get away, of course. But if it's you or him and there's no other way, or it's your family or he's coming into your home, how are your guns set up and can you get to them? And if you can't, can you change it so that you can still be a law-abiding gun owner?
And on top of that, is that something that you want to do? Because this isn't for everybody. Not everybody feels that they should be able to use their guns for self-defense. And all three of us do not feel that way. We all feel that guns are a perfect tool for self-defense. It's one of the tiers. There are many different levels of self-defense, and they are the last one. They're the last resort. But all three of us are comfortable with the idea that if it's going to be him or me, it's going to be him. And not everybody is ready to wrap their mind around that. And if you're one of those people, don't worry about it. Give this some thought. Maybe just
have
this something.
Yeah, we're not talking to them. So.
Just have this something to chew on. And this could just be the catalyst that kind of helps start your transformation of your mind to be ready for something like that. And not everybody's there yet. But for the people who are there, like Trevor said, are you ready? Are you really ready? Have you thought about it? And that's usually the first step, is just thinking about it. It's like, oh, wow, I have guns. I could use that to stop somebody that broke into my house. All right, then. Set them up. How do you got your gun set up? So.
How do you guys have your gun set up?
Well, let's start with Owen, because Owen's got one of the best ones, I think.
Well, maybe. I don't know.
Especially if you're in bed asleep. You've got one of the best ones. So.
Yeah, I have basically, in my bedroom, I have a gun safe built in to the house. I planned it when I built the house. I built it all in with a mechanical keypad, punch in the code, open the door, and everything's
there. Guns. It's basically, yeah. So, and the really cool part to having a safe, having your guns in a safe, is that none of your guns need to ever be trigger locked in there, restricted or non, and all of your ammo can also be stored in there, and it's completely legal to have your ammo loaded into magazines ready to be inserted into firearms if need be.
Yeah. So, for example, I have my pistol with a weapon-mounted light and two mags, and then I have my wife's pistol. We just have the one weapon-mounted light, so I have my wife's pistol with a Surefire. I forget the brand of that one.
Oh, I was going to say, I forget what it's called. It's a flashlight, Owen. Flashlight.
Yeah, Surefire flashlight with a couple more mags. So, you know, if something happened in the night, It would be very easy for me to grab and investigate, get the kids, and she can still be, covering the stairs while I do that type of thing. So, yeah, besides the AR with the mags and, everything else is just, it's all right there. It's not a huge safe. It's not like it's a room. I don't have to run up and down stairs. I don't have to go to another room.
Safe doesn't have two floors? It's only a single floor safe?
No, but I mean, I don't store my firearms on other. I do have a gun cabinet elsewhere in the house, but
you don't keep guns in there that you would generally use for home defense.
I keep a 22 just in case, just to keep it in there, and then it's on the first floor if there's skunk in the yard or there's a porcupine
attacking
my dog or a raccoon getting into my chickens,
yeah,
it's close at hand. I don't have to go upstairs, but
Makes sense.
So that's pretty simple. That's what I do.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll talk about our vehicles later, I guess. As for my home setup, I have I don't have a gun safe. Actually, that's not true. I have one gun safe. It's a handgun safe, and that's where I keep my handguns, and that safe is located in my bedroom close to where I could get at it if I needed to in the middle of the night or whatnot. It's quick to get into. It has both my handguns, and it has loaded mags in there, so it's ready to go if I need it. Also, because I don't have a gun safe for my long guns, I'm required to either remove the bolt or trigger lock them. So the guns that I can remove the bolts on, I have, and those are the guns that I generally wouldn't be using for home defense anyway. So the bolts are removed and stored in a separate location. And because the rest of my guns just have trigger locks on them, I can put them wherever I want in my house. I don't need to have them hidden away or locked away or whatever, as long as they're not accessible to ammo. I can display them, quote unquote display. All they are is leaning in the corner in different rooms. But in my bedroom, I have my 12 gauge shotgun leaning up next to my bed, and in that handgun safe is a couple of boxes of buckshot ammunition. So I've got my shotgun ammo locked up legally. My shotgun's next to my bed with a trigger lock on it, and my trigger locks are all combination trigger locks. And those combination trigger locks I can take off,
Matthew,
with my eyes closed. Yeah.
You said you've got your shotgun ammo locked up legally.
I have my shotgun ammo locked up, yes.
You don't have to have it locked up, you just have to have it stored separately.
It needs to be stored separately. However, if I have it in the same room and it's not locked, I don't know if I could argue that that's separate.
If you have the shotgun next to the bed with a trigger lock on it and the ammo is in the nightstand, that's separate.
It could be, yep. You know, and that's a good point. The thing is, though, if I'm going to be deploying...
Well, it comes back to your comfort level.
That's right.
I would be comfortable putting it in the nightstand and calling it separate.
Sure. My
if it was
guns,
in a saddle carrier attached to the receiver,
that's
I
not
would
separate.
Not call that separate.
That's right. No, and that's a good point. Now, the thing is, though, the ammo is in the safe, which is in my nightstand. Mm-hmm. So if I'm going to be... I've always thought that if somebody comes into my house at night, my handgun is my first choice.
I used to think that.
I have reasons for it. I can manipulate lights, doors, flashlights, and whatnot with one hand while I have a handgun in the other hand a lot more easily than I can do that with a shotgun in my hand. So the shotgun is for I'm barricaded in the room. You come through that door, you're getting a face full of buckshot. The handgun is for, oh, something just crashed downstairs. Start yelling, get out of my house. I don't hear anything. Then I go down to investigate sort of thing. So... Anyway, I have...
Yeah, I do. I would almost agree with Matthew in some ways. The handgun is a lot easier. I know this is going a little where we, you know, didn't...
That's all right. Squirrel off wherever you want.
...to go, but it's for me, in the dark, it's a heck of a lot easier to grab a handgun that I know exactly where it's sitting, slam a magazine into it, have a weapon-mounted light all set to go. That's a lot faster to employ than it is to pick up the rifle... Get the magazine and get it in, get around in the chamber. It's just faster.
And not only that, it's a shotgun that I have, so it's unlock the safe, take the trigger lock off, and start pumping shells into the tube. So
so the handgun's up, the handgun's active.
Yeah, okay. We get a handgun. Yeah.
But I mean, everybody's, you know, use what you got, right? If you don't have a handgun, use a shotgun. That's fine. There's no reason. And if I just had a shotgun, maybe I wouldn't have the handgun safe. And so maybe the ammo would just be laying there, which means I would get it into the gun faster.
Okay. So non-hypothetical is what we have.
Right. Exactly. So that's what I have. I think it's set up well. It's you know, it could be better, I guess. But I think it works for what I have for what I need. I think it's set up just right. And here's the other thing is I actually practice lights out, you know, shades drawn, so there's no light in the room. I practice getting that safe open and getting the gun ready to go if I needed to. The gun also, the handgun also has tritium night sights. So, you know, I don't have to worry about finding my sights in the dark either. So, you know, little things, add them all up together. And I think it's a pretty effective self-defense setup. Trevor.
Trevor, what about you?
I have a total of four safes. So in the bedroom, there's a walk-in closet. In the walk-in closet, there's a safe bolted to a shelf. And it's a Fort Knox push-button
in that is Glock 17 and 4 or 5 magazines filled with hollow point ammunition, and my armor's hanging on a hanger right underneath that. That's kind of like, in my situation, I wouldn't go. If I heard a crash downstairs, Matthew, I would, first thing I would do after I would, well, as best I could, I would probably get Christina on the phone with 911 while I retrieve my handgun. And I would stay upstairs until the police arrived. I wouldn't go downstairs for anything.
Well, let's see. And here's there's the reason why you wake up. You don't know why you've woken up.
Just tell me what I would do.
Yeah, yeah.
But let me justify
what I've said.
No, you don't have to justify what you said.
Too late. I'm going to. Shut up.
This is my time to talk about my setups.
Nope. I'm going to edit you out if you keep talking. Here's the thing. I have animals and I have cats, and sometimes they will break things downstairs. And so I will go investigate. I'm not going to wait for the police to show up if I think the cat knocked a lamp over. That being said, I'm not going to go investigate without my gun. I would still go just in case, but I'm not going to call the cops if I think the cat knocked a lamp over. Now, if there's thrashing and crashing and somebody is clearly downstairs, then I'm staying upstairs. That's when the shotgun gets loaded, and that's when I barricade the door, and the phone is in the bedroom. Jewel's on the phone. She's calling 911, telling the cops to get there. Of course, it's a 35-minute wait for us, so we'll see who they draw the chalk around.
So that's how the bedroom is set up. And then, so it's this quick push button. There's a flashlight next to my bed, so the lights would stay off. It's a walk-in closet. If somebody did come up the stairs and did get into the bedroom, I would be in a perfect quote-unquote ambush position. They wouldn't know. They would come in and they would have their side or their back to me before they knew what happened. Upstairs, the safe in the man cave is filled with ARs, a handgun, the shotgun. So the action on the 590 is open, and the buckshot is on the top shelf in a kind of a ready position. It can be grabbed and dropped into the open action and the pump closed very easily, and the next four can be picked up simultaneously and loaded with a weekend load, just like you would if you were loading your shotgun in a match. LAR mags in there, couple together, another 10-rounder, and 357 Magnum with the cylinder open and speed loaders at the ready as well. There's even a 30-round magazine in there for my Remington 597 22 semi-automatic. So that's, you know, when you open, and every time while I'm in this room, I'm always cleaning a gun, so that gun safe is always open, so that I can clean guns, put it back, grab another gun, clean it, put it back. Or if I'm dry firing, you know, I can practice dry firing in the mall, and so the safe is open while I'm in the room. There's another safe with the, you know, hunting guns in another bedroom downstairs. In the basement, there's another handgun safe bolted to my ammunition cabinet. So generally when I'm down there reloading listening to a podcast, maybe sorting brass, that's open so that I can take it out and do some dry fire practice with that. And that also has, that only has one magazine in it, again, filled with Hornady critical duty ammunition. So that's how I've got my three setups going. The upstairs, speed loader, shotgun ammo. You know, I don't lock the bolts open on my ARs because there's spring tension there on the buffer tube spring, but I do keep the bolt open on the shotgun.
Well, that, and it's so easy to close the bolt in an AR, too. You don't want it, you know, bump something and it snap shut on you.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I think it should be mentioned before someone writes us and says this, especially our American listeners, there is no substitute for carrying on you in the home or
anywhere.
That's
true. And whenever I'm home alone,
this is our very Canadian setup, because of our limitations.
That's right. And we can carry in the house. We just can't have a loaded gun in the house. So it's completely legal for us to stick a handgun in a holster and have a loaded mag in our pocket. And you'll see me around the house like that from time to time. And I know every time I go to Owen's, he's got a gun on. And he does. So
Maybe not every time.
All right. Well, we've only got about 4 minutes left. Why don't we talk about our vehicle setups, too, if any of us have setups in our vehicles.
Well, I carry non-restricted. And the beauty of the safe storage regulations and transportation regulations that the RCMP have laid out say that a non-restricted firearm need only be unloaded during transportation. There's no requirement for a case. There's no requirement for a trigger lock. The The only time you have to lock them up is when the car is left unattended.
That's right.
But even then, I don't see anything in the regulations that say I have to put a trigger lock on it.
Nope. All you got to do is have it out of sight and locked. If it has a trunk, it needs to be in the trunk. If it doesn't have a trunk, it just needs to be out of sight and the door is locked. That's
so
it.
So in New Brunswick, obviously, if you're going to drive around with a firearm in your vehicle, whether it's non-restricted or not, I know in New Brunswick, they're going to look for a rationale for why it's there. So it's good to just get a hunting license. And then when the question comes up, why do you have a gun in your car?
Because I want to go hunting.
I'm on my way to or from my hunting grounds.
Yeah, and you can have a hunting license all year round for probably less than $50 if you do it right. Get a varmint license for half the year and get a small game for the rest, and it's not expensive.
The only problem we have in this province is we're restricted by caliber.
That's right. So basically, two to three is our largest caliber
in this province. Yeah. Yep. Otherwise, one of the best choices for a non-restricted trunk gun in New Brunswick. But for other provinces, you may want to consider this would be a Kel-Tec RFB. 308.
Bolt pop, non-restricted,
compact,
That's a good
point. So, yeah. Now, that being said, I always kept mine, I keep it in a case anyway when it's in the vehicle. Because I don't want the, but it's usually a soft case with a zipper, so it's pretty quick access.
Yep. Well, you don't want it just flopping around in the back of your trunk, too. I mean, people do look in your windows. Optic. No, and yeah, it's not good for that either.
What about you guys?
All I've got in my truck is a .22. I carry my one of my Marlins with me everywhere I go. It's really the only non-restricted firearm that I would normally have with me for hunting and plinking purposes, and I feel I can justify that just fine. And I also feel that if I needed to, .22 in my truck is way better than the 12-gauge I leave at home. So I've just got a .22, but it's a reliable .22, and I feel very confident using it if I needed to.
Yeah, I don't have anything that I regularly carry in my vehicle. So,
all right,
I might throw a .22 in or something. But it's not something I regularly do. But right. I don't have a vehicle with a trunk or anything like that. So,
yeah, well, my truck. I mean, I throw my .22 in a nylon gun case and just behind the front seats along the floor.
I would strongly consider in the future having a takedown .22 though, like you have to carry.
Yep. Yeah, no, something that you can get out quick. It doesn't need to be, super powerful. It just needs to be something that you can use. And this isn't us wanting to play cowboys or cops and robbers and chase after bad guys. This is purely for our own self-defense. I'm not going to intervene, in a police situation if I see police with their guns drawn. It's not like I'm going to get out of my truck and, guys, I got my gun too, and run up and try to help them. I'm going to get shot if I do that. You got to be smart about these things. This is last line of defense. And the nice thing is, in most of our situations, all of these guns that we have with us regularly are guns that we use regularly. My .22 is always being employed if I'm out and about because I'm shooting, out in the woods or out in a gravel pit or at the range or wherever. So, it's a good way to have your gun with you. You keep up to speed on your practices and your skills and your sight pictures and trigger press and all that. And, if you need it, it's that last line of defense. Heaven forbid.
Excellent. Well, let's, if that's everything anyone has to say, let's move on to listener feedback.
Excellent.
Okay, Matthew, would you like to bring read us the first email here?
Would I ever? It's from our good friend from Ontario, Mr. 10X. I was going to say, all the way from Scotland, but he's not from there anymore. He's from Ontario now. Anyway, he writes, he says, gentlemen, with November fast approaching, I would like to ask Slamfire Radio to ask the Canadian listeners to contact their gun club board members to purchase a wreath from the local region to be laid at the local cenotaph on Remembrance Day. With the recent sacrifices made by Warrant Officer Patrice and Corporal... Patrice?
I would say.
Okay, yes. Patrice and Corporal Cirillo. Yep. Recognition of their service is something that should be at the forefront of our thoughts. And I agree with that 100%. That is a great idea. Thank you for the suggestion, 10X. He goes, by the way, Matthew, Sumeria is in Iraq. Slightly different from Israel. Yeah, but that's not... I said it wrong last week. It wasn't Sumeria. It was another place that was actually in Israel, pretty sure. Because the guy's from Israel.
Or wrong. I mean...
No, I'm just saying, it's not the same word. It's a different word. I recognize the spelling's different. I can't say it.
Funnier this way.
Fine, I was wrong. Sumeria is in Israel. I mean, Iraq.
They're both in Iraq.
They both start with I. What's the big deal? Canada, Cambodia, same thing. Trevor. Trevor, be careful with the grip strength exercises, as overdoing it can lead to tennis elbow, which can take time to heal. Best regards, Peter Dawson. P.S. Can I still register for SummerSlam without a Brian Bolivar number? Oh, no, black badge number. He just put BB. I just figured it was Brian Bolivar. Yeah.
So, I'll answer that one real quick. You do have a black badge number. You took your black badge in New Brunswick, so you have a New Brunswick black badge number, but a Nipsic black badge number is a Nipsic black badge number. Does not matter, and this comes straight from Sean Hansen, does not matter in which province you were trained. As long as you're trained and have your black badge, you were then required to join your home section. So contact Ipsic Ontario and ask them why they have not given you an Ipsic Ontario membership yet, because I sent your money to them months ago, and you'll be good to go. And if they don't want to enroll you for some reason, contact Sean Hansen. You're trained. And the rules of Ipsic Ontario don't apply to you until you're a member of Ipsic Ontario. You understand? Like, they can't say you have to be trained by us. They can't tell you what to do until you're a member of their section. They have no authority over you. So once you join, then you have to play by Ipsic Ontario's rules if they have some that are different. But
yeah, you got your black badge before you were under their authority.
That's right.
You got your black badge here in New Brunswick. It counts across the nation. So
that's right. And that comes straight from Sean Hansen. I can send the email to anyone who wants to read it. You can be trained
anywhere.
So
do you have to be a member of the province where you live?
Yes, that is the only stipulation. You can get trained anywhere you want, but you have to join the section where you reside.
Okay.
So once he does that, then he can apply for any level 3 match.
Yep. Okay.
So, I mean, for that matter, I don't see why he would be turned away from an Ipsic Ontario match. He's black badge trained. Well, I suppose you have to be a member of your section to shoot an Ipsic match. Forget I said that. Yeah, we even want people in New Brunswick who want to shoot a level 1. You have to be a member of Ipsic New Brunswick. Why are you showing up to an Ipsic match if you're not paying your dues? We wouldn't have Ipsic in our province if it weren't for Ipsic New Brunswick, and the same is true anywhere in the country. So, yes, the rest of his email, tennis elbow, good to know. I already have some symptoms of tennis elbow. I will not aggravate that.
It's because of all the tennis you play?
Yeah, no. Anyway, I think it has to do with shooting handguns, actually. It's just tennis elbow is just a name for a repetitive strain injury up near your elbow, right?
You don't think that it would be from archery?
No, this started months ago.
Yeah,
and
but,
when
but
I,
you don't,
I start dry don't, firing,
but yeah,
I start dry firing, the first couple of times I draw and pop out to the target, I feel it in both arms, on the outside of the forearm, right in front of the elbow, like on the wrist side. Yeah. And then after I warm up, it goes away. And it hasn't been bad lately.
I have a similar thing with that. It's not from shooting, but I notice it when I shoot if I'm not careful. And I can't snap out like that. And the first few times that I was doing that and snapping those arms out into that isosceles, I hurt myself. Because I do have some hyperextension in my right elbow from sword fighting. And from throwing shots and missing and having my elbow lock at
it's like shadow boxing at full extension. You're gonna hurt
exactly
yourself.
So I do notice it, so I have to be very careful now when I go to my isosceles. It's not locked, I have to slow rate down, and if I do lock it, I have to put myself in that position very slow, you know, carefully, so I don't hurt my elbow more. But
the first time I played boxing on Wii, I did that, right? I was throwing all these full shots, and the next day I paid for it. As far as buying a wreath, though, Owen,
first world problems, getting hurt on Wii.
Yeah, that's right. Owen, you still the president of your club?
Yep.
Yeah, well, you could bring that back. I'm going to bring it back to my club that we should buy a wreath on behalf of the club and put it at the cenotaph.
Yep, absolutely.
Cool. Yep.
All right. Matt, why don't you grab the next one?
No, it's Trevor's turn.
Oh, Trevor, sorry. Oh, yeah, you read the first one. Yep, sorry.
There you go.
He's just done so much talking that I assumed it was his.
This one, that's because I was only on one other show this week. We didn't do Action Shooting Radio. If I would have got in 3 podcasts, I'd be a little talked out, but I'm trying to get it all crammed in here. This is from Mrs. Ewok. She says, "Howdy, fellas. I need some more information on the charity shoot, town names, what airport we should fly into, etc., so I can start looking into things and we can figure out if we can make the trip.
Please make sure Filthy knows that he can't shoot living Ewoks, only targets. Thanks. So that comes to us from
Mrs. Ewoks Toby. Have a really high-pitched voice?
No, I don't think so.
No. I thought they had, like, high-pitched
voice. And it would sound something sort of like this.
Yeah, no, that's kind
except of they speak a different language, so.
Yeah. No,
that's exactly.
That's an Ewok.
Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Sounds more like a Jawa, actually.
Actually, I was going to say the same thing, yeah.
So real quickly, if you're coming from the United States, you got three options. You can fly into Presque Isle, Maine, rent a car, and then drive about 5.5 hours to where I am.
That's Presque Isle, Presque, and then Isle, like it's, island, but short. It's French.
Right. It's French, yeah.
I know, I say that because the last two people I told to go to Presque Isle said, where? So I was like, okay, I'll break it down. All right. Yes, Presque Isle. That is a good option. That's one option. Carry on.
Moncton is an international airport, so you can fly into Moncton, then rent a car, and drive 3.5 hours to where we are. Or Bathurst, which means you're going to fly into Canada through Montreal. You'll go through customs in Montreal, and then you'll take a little puddle hopper -8 from Montreal into Bathurst. Those are really your three options, unless you're going to drive, of course.
Here's another option. You can go to Presque Isle, and you can coordinate with me, and I can come get you, like I went and got Tommy and Daniel, and I can provide transportation to and from the range for you.
For VIPs.
For VIPs, yeah.
So very immense people.
Very. I'm not saying nothing.
But yeah, that might actually work. It depends on... See, Toby and Melissa are going to be around their anniversary, and they may want, and I know Styx and Edith as well. They don't just want to hang out with us and do the charity shoot. They want to do the tourist thing and get in to do some outdoor stuff, so they may want to have their own vehicle.
Right.
But they also may want to coordinate and rent a car and drive up together. There's a couple of different options. The towns. Where are you going to be going? You're going to be staying in the town of Campbellton. That's Camp Belton.
Or Camp Belton. As Camp Daniel Shaw like to call it.
That's Camp right, Belton. Camp Belton. So we're in Camp Belton, and the range is in the village of Balmoral.
But you don't need to know that because we'll be taking you to and from there probably, or at least providing better directions once you get here. It's really in the middle of nowhere. Take a left, keep going, go to the other middle
past
of nowhere.
The elbow.
Yeah, then you end up to where you're not supposed to be.
When you're in the armpit of nowhere, yeah. I mean, almost everybody who's going to be coming from great distances, like all the podcasters are going to coordinate and work out of here. And the house is already filled up, so if you haven't been given a spot, I'm sorry. She filled up fast, so to speak. I think that's it, Campbellton. And then you can fly into Bathurst, Moncton, or Presque Isle. Yes.
Okay.
And we already have, a Facebook page created. It's an event, and it's open to the public, so you can search it under 5th Annual Canadian Podcast Network Charity Shoot. I think so far there's more people indicated that they're coming than that were present last year.
So that's cool. That's very awesome good. Turnout. I'm looking forward to this turnout already. It's not even winter yet. Well, it is, but just barely.
Hey, whatever we do today, we don't have to do tomorrow.
That's it.
All right. I'll get this last one here from the Partridge Man, he calls himself. Can Matt tell more partridge hunting stories? Partridge is my favorite meat. When my dad hunted partridge, my brother and I were in charge of cleaning the partridge, except for the time my dad shot a partridge with buckshot. It was like someone put Tannerite in a partridge. Also, a partridge foot was an awesome toy. Can't wait to hear Matt tell stories about hunting partridge, shooting partridge, cleaning partridge, cooking partridge, and eating partridge. Partridge, partridge, partridge. If Matt head seems to be about to explode by you saying partridge so much, keep on reading. I think I'll read the last sentence again. Can't wait to hear Matt tell stories about hunting partridge, shooting partridge, cleaning partridge, cooking partridge, and eating partridge, 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 partridge.
You know what my favorite band was in the 70s?
The Partridge Family.
Yeah!
I hate you guys. I hate all of you so much.
Thanks. That's from Mark Partridge Price.
Oh.
I didn't know that was his middle name.
Oh.
Either.
Thanks, no, Mark. No more partridge stories for you.
You just made my night. okay. So I think that's the end of Lister feedback. Best iTunes. Do we have any iTunes reviews this week?
I had checked earlier in the week, and I couldn't tell if they were new or not. I don't know.
Okay. Shoutouts.
I think Matthew and I just did some, didn't we?
Yeah, we did some like last week or 2 weeks ago or something. I think we're probably caught up, maybe. I don't know. Somebody could check if they want.
Oh, maybe it was American side. I was like, yeah, there's some new American ones we need to get caught up on.
All right, well, we'll do that next week, maybe.
All right. I've got a shout-out for John Camforce, the guy who lost to Matthew. I mean, it's not why I'm shouting him out, but you'll get him next time, John. No, you won't. Thanks for the chocolate, John.
Oh, my goodness. Yes. Holy crap. That stuff's amazing.
John works at a chocolate company or a chocolate factory. My wife refers to him as Willy Wonka, and he brings her chocolate, too, whenever he comes, if he stays here for a match. He hooked me up with, like, 2 or 3 pounds of dark chocolate covered espresso beans.
Oh my goodness, they were so good. Whoa. They're all gone, by the way. I couldn't stop eating them and I was wired for a while.
Really, that's awesome. So thanks, John, for that. Not that you listen, but thanks if you, anyway.
Yeah. You should listen though.
All right. That's all for shout outs. Be sure to join both of our National Firearms Associations, the CSSA and the NFA, especially after what's happened to the news recently that I think joining them so they can fight for gun rights is should be a high priority on your list. Hey, ask for it for Christmas. It's coming up. Ask for a membership for Christmas. Also, check us out on the Gun Owners of Canada web forum. Like us on Facebook. And be sure to check out all the other great shows of both the Reno Viola Outdoor Web Radio Network as well as the Crusader Podcast Network. Lots of great shows on there. And that's the end of the show, everybody. Do you have anything to add to say?
I do.
Okay.
Thoughts and prayers go to the two New York City police officers that were attacked just within the last couple of hours by a hatchet.
Oh.
Breaking story on CNN right now.
Was there a person attached to the hatchet?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, world is going to crap.
Yep.
When we tell you to stay vigilant, we're not playing.
Stay vigilant. Definitely. Yep.
All right. That's it. No. Okay. Well, I just want everyone to know that this show is brought to you on 100% recycled electrons.
So if you have any comments or questions for the show, please send an email to slamfireradio@gmail.com. Now go grab a gun and shoot something.
My neighbor's car got stole last night. Right out of his driveway. We heard the dogs were barking. We never paid them any mind. Mary said she's gonna lock the door from now on when we go away. And I've been walking around this farm, wondering if it's time. It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Time to put something between me and the sun. When the talking is over, it's time to get a gun. Last week a government man was there when I walked out of my back door. He said, I'm sorry to bother you, son, but it don't matter anymore. 'Cause even while we're talking, right here where we stand, they're making plans for a 4-lane highway and a big old overpass. It's time to get a gun. That's what I've been thinking. Well, I could afford one if I did just a little less drink and time to put something between me and the sun.